Contracting officers and program managers don't appreciate it when prime contractors bid a particular sub, only to pull a switcheroo after the award and the work starts. Small businesses hate being escorted to the dance, only to have their date abandon them at the punch bowl. Well, now new rules to curb bait and switch are coming from the FAR Council. We get more now from procurement attorney Joseph Petrillo. And Joe, this has really been a long time in the making, hasn't it, these latest rounds of rulemaking?
Oh, yes. This round of rulemaking found its origin in new provisions put in the Small Business Jobs Act of 2010. SBA implemented those requirements in a new final rule in 2013, and now they're finally getting into the FAR in 2016. So we no longer measure the implementation of a statute in months. We do it in years.
Well, now it's finally here, I guess, as of what, November 17th, these become effective? November
is,
of 2017.
Yes. One section is effective November 2017, and we'll talk about that. But most of the regulations are going to be effective November 1, 2016, and the way contractors will see them is that they will be in a revised clause that will start getting into solicitations and in some contracts after November 1, 2016. So we're now beginning to phase in the new rules.
Let's talk about that rule regarding the so-called bait and switch technique, that this goes back to time immemorial, and that you bid with a sub and then you drop that sub and put someone else in. Now it's not so easy, or it won't be so easy.
No, it's not going to be so easy. This rule applies to subs that you relied upon in preparing your bid proposal, and the two ways that you can trigger that test is if you identify the sub in the bidder proposal or the subcontracting plan. So if you name the sub somewhere in the subcontracting plan or the bidder proposal, then this rule applies. But it also applies even if you used the small business concerns pricing or cost information or technical expertise in preparing the bidder proposal, where there's written evidence of an intent or understanding that the small business concern gets a subcontract if the bidder gets a prime contract. And certainly a teaming agreement would fit that bill, but other situations might as well.
So, for example, if a systems integrator is going to use a distributor or a reseller to fulfill the hardware requirements on a contract, that may or may not be something that they would be required to keep. But if it's someone that offers technical understanding or technical quality to that bid, then that subcontractor, they would likely have to justify if they don't want to use it anymore.
Right. What that would trigger is a requirement to use a good faith effort to use the subcontractor and use it to the same degree that they relied on in preparing the proposal. So, good faith effort, I guess, means that you have to do it unless there's a good reason not to. And there are situations where that might occur. The company might not be performing properly. They might not be able to agree on a subcontract on issues that weren't agreed on before the bid went in. I mean, there are a variety of situations where that might be the case, but in most instances, you would think that a good faith effort would get the sub in there and use it for the same degree of work as was proposed.
In the summary of the rule, it says that you as the prime would have to provide within 30 days of the contract completion information to the contracting officer, reasons why you as the prime are unable to do so, that is, use that sub. Unable doesn't exactly sound like don't wish to anymore.
Well, it's very interesting. It certainly isn't that. The clause isn't very clear about what triggers this requirement to go to the contracting officer. But if you look at the explanatory material in the Federal Register, it's not simply that you weren't able to use the sub. It's that you weren't able to make a good faith effort to use the sub. So I think that gets a little convoluted. And if you're reporting that you're not making a good faith effort, then you're basically reporting that you've breached the contract. So the way the situation is set up, I think companies may be reporting in instances where perhaps they don't have to. And the reporting fact if the government understands it properly, could trigger some, further investigation into what was the contract, was a prime contract breached.
So the lesson for primes then is pick your subs carefully when putting your bids together.
Well, certainly it would be great to avoid this problem by using the sub to the same extent that was planned. And you're absolutely right. Picking the subs carefully is a terrific idea for this and other reasons.
We're speaking with D.C. procurement attorney Joseph Petrillo, and there are some other rules here regarding what primes, what they can do to bar subs from discussing payment issues with the contracting officer.
That's
right.
That
seems pretty big, too.
Primes cannot bar a subcontractor from discussing payment or utilization issues with the contracting officer. So if the sub isn't being used to the extent anticipated, then they can go to the contracting officer and complain, and that's something that the prime contractor would probably have to pay attention to. And that's one of the other changes here. There's also a change, and this is the one that's implemented after November 2017, and this is, I think, a significant one. It's for task and delivery order contracts. Primes must report subcontracting information for individual orders, and there was an objection to this as a proposed regulation that it would be unduly burdensome, but that's what the statute seemed to require, and they enacted this as a final rule. But if you think about it, if you have a vehicle that's an ordering vehicle, and you have a bunch of orders, and you're trying to figure out what your small business utilization is, you'd have to know the answers for the individual orders, I would think, in order to, sum them up to get a total for the contract. So in most instances, you're going to need to know that information anyway. Now you have to report it, and if you have a contract with lots of orders, it could be burdensome.
That seems to be a trend now with procurement policy, is the ability of the government to reach beyond or through the primes right to the subs. I mean, you could be walking into a contracting officer's office to discuss something and see some of your big primes leaving the office while you're walking in.
It's entirely possible, and there certainly is a trend in that direction. There's always a political benefit to pushing small business participation in contracting, and so we get rules like this that are adopted. And there's always a policy tension between, or policy choice between, trying to increase prime contract utilization through things like set-asides, or simply trying to funnel more dollars through subcontracting and not worrying so much about the prime contracting end of it. But when the government pushes the subcontracting part of the equation, then they inevitably start getting involved in things like this, where they're getting into the nitty-gritty of a prime-sub relationship.
Getting back to the task and delivery order contracts and the reporting requirement for individual orders, again, you said that's a year and a half off yet. What motivated the government to want to have that information?
Well, there's some suspicion that on IDIQ vehicles, prime contractor promises lots of small business utilization, but then as the orders come in, that doesn't necessarily pan out. Now, in defense of the prime contractor's dilemma here, it may be that the orders that were anticipated when the contract was awarded are one type, and the actual orders that the contractor gets during contract performance are of a different nature, and it might be harder to subcontract some of those orders. So there may be reasons for that, but the government seems to want to know what's going on in these arrangements in terms of small business subcontracting.
Well, this business certainly keeps people on their toes.
It always does.
Joe Petrillo is a procurement attorney with the firm Petrillo & Powell. As always, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Tom.
You can share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click Share with Friends.